everybody, and welcome to our second episode of the Tafahum Wat Tabadl podcast. So last time, if you might remember, we had a great conversation with Mustafa Bayoumi from the Anwar Gargash Diplomatic Academy about the implications of climate change for the Gulf region and how climate and security are increasingly intertwined. So just check our last episode if you did not listen to it yet. Today, we are shifting our focus a little bit. So what we want to do is to explore the role of the Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, in the Gulf region and West Asia, and how they intersect with health, with climate change, and with regional security. And it's oftentimes a little bit confusing to talk about the Gulf region and West Asia. So let me clarify that we focus on the following countries, meaning Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Oman, Kuwait, and Bahrain, as well as Iran, Iraq, and Yemen. So, and I'm again extremely thrilled to be joined by my co-host for today, Zina, and it's very great to have you again with me.
Sebastian, it's also great to have you again with us. So, hi from sunny Bonn, the place where Carpo is based and where so many of our dialogues just begin. And we will also continue for sure. As I mentioned in our first episode, I work especially on the intersection of environment and health. And this is exactly why I'm so happy to have the guest today with us and to have this discussion. We are joined by someone who brings deep insight into these areas. So Lama Saksak, we will have her today with us. And she is a principal researcher at the Mohammed bin Rashid School of Government in the United Arab Emirates and lead author of the Arab SDG Index and the Dashboard Report, a key regional reference produced in collaboration with the United Nations Sustainable Development Solution Network. She is also working with the UNFCCC on the UAE BLEEM Work Program, developing indicators to assess programs in climate adaptation and resilience. Her academic background in global health policy and sustainable development, along with her focus on the Middle East region, makes her for sure a perfect candidate for this episode today. So, Lama, we are really happy to have you today with us. I remember us chatting just a few months ago after a workshop and a really nice lunch in the Anwar Gargash Diplomatic Academy, how nicely it would also to face this themes of climate, health, and regional security in a podcast. So welcome to you, dear Lama, and we are really appreciating to have you today with us.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you with us today, Lama, and thanks so much for taking the time to join us. And of course, we want to start our conversation a little bit smoothly. As you are tremendously working on the SDGs, is there any favorite sustainable development goal you are most favorably working on or that is personally the most relevant for you?
Hello, everyone. First of all, let me start by thanking you both. And it's always a pleasure to have exciting chats with you as usual. Interesting question, to be honest with you. It's very difficult to choose a favorite SDG. I think each is important and critical in its own way. However, if I want to choose, I would say, and this might actually surprise you, it would be SDG number 14 and SDG number 15, both related to ecosystems. And the reason why, because from my experience working with the SDGs, they tend to be neglected a little bit. So I think it's important to research them, to bring them to the front, because ecosystems, and we tend to think, you know, of nature, it's something like it's separate from us. The ecosystems, they exist outside of our life. But when you actually look at the evidence, our life and ecosystems are very, very interconnected. And I think more policy, more research should be looking into that.
Oh, I really like this, Lama, actually. So you really brought up like this One Health planetary approach. And I think it's really underestimated a lot. So I really appreciate that you brought that up. So, but yeah, to get started, as the lead researcher behind the Arab SDG Index and the DESH report, could you give us maybe a quick overview about what the report covers? And based on the latest findings, what does it tell us about the countries in the region, what they are doing in terms of health and climate goals?
Absolutely. So the Arab SDG Index is an initiative to basically provide a policy tool or a data-driven tool, let's say, to policymakers, researchers, whatever group is interested in advancing or monitoring the SDGs. And the idea is to cover the entire Arab world, all 22 countries. And we have more than 110 indicators looking into all of the SDGs, the 17 SDGs. And to summarize it in a short answer, it would be very difficult. So I'm glad that you chose the health and the climate SDGs. So I'm going to pick some findings from SDG 3 and SDG 13. But to give you just a general idea, the overall performance, let's say, of the Arab region. So we measure the performance on a scale from 0 to 100. 100 means complete achievement. So the average or the overall score is 60%, almost 60%. Or I think to be very accurate, it's actually 60.5% for the entire region. And the in terms of achievement, so when we talk about the Arab world, normally we talk about it in, we lump countries together. And when you actually look at the, you know, economic makeup, the demographics of the Arab countries there, or the performance even in each individual SDG, they're quite different. Even when you have two countries that have similar scores on the scale, when you look at their individual SDG performance, they're quite different. So I think this is very important to highlight. And the second major finding from our report is the level of inequalities in SDG performance in the Arab region. So, of course, we have the top performers that perform above the average, and we have the least, I'm not going to say achievers, but the countries with the least score. And of course, you have the least developed countries and also the countries that are conflict affected. For example, Yemen. Just to give you a quick comparison, for example, if we are looking at the GCC and Yemen, the highest performing country in the GCC scoring 70, while Yemen's score is 49. So you see that there's huge difference in scores. So when it comes to SDG number 3, let's go a little bit deeper. SDG 3, of course, looks at the health outcomes and the health systems and the health inputs, right? So when it comes to health outcomes, generally speaking, when it comes to basic health outcomes, the region has some green scores and some green trends, which means that things are progressing in the right direction. And of course, I really want to stress here something that we are talking generally, right? So when you look at the details, you might find differences between countries. Again, this is important. But generally speaking, this the things going in terms of basic health outcomes. But when you look, for example, at health systems, we see some trends in the Arab region. The Gulf region has strong health systems and is moving fast or rapidly into digitalization. E-health, especially after COVID, became a major trend in the Gulf states. And the reason why this is important for our conversation today is because this adds a layer of resilience. Right. If you think about what happened during COVID, when things, when people could not reach clinics or hospitals, whatever, then the idea of digital health became very, very important. So it adds a layer of resilience. Another trend is the advancement, let's say, or the inclusion, basically. Let me say the inclusion of mental health policies the GCC is one sub-region where this trend is showing. And of course, mental health and climate change, there's research that has been done in this area, and there is actually a relation between, we're not going into so many details, but it's definitely relevant to climate change. The inequalities is something that we see in health outcomes and health systems. Of course, conflict-affected countries, and I think one of the countries that you're interested in knowing about is Yemen. We see that Yemen is struggling even in basic health outcomes. Of course, being a conflict-affected country that highly impacts the health infrastructure, the resources available, the capacity, professionals that are available there, this is all impacted by conflict. Another just one trend that I want to highlight, maybe this is going a bit into the specifics, which is air quality. Air quality seems to be sort of a common or a shared challenge for the Arab region. And this has to do with so many reasons. Some of them are a direct impact of pollution, and some of them that happen naturally. Like some areas in the Arab region do have some natural phenomenon that increase air pollution. And of course, air pollution would impact health outcomes, because in some Arab countries, there is already high prevalence of diseases like asthma, for example. Asthma is a common health issue in the Arab region. This is not an exhaustive example, but I was doing some research actually into this. There was a systematic review done in 2024 where they looked at data and research from different Arab countries. And the countries from the GCC, for example, were included, and Qatar, Saudi, and the UAE had a percentage of prevalence of asthma. They had percentage in children. This is the prevalence in children, to be very specific. I think it was between 14% to 16%, which is not a small number. Yemen also had high, I think it was around 14%, but this is not due to urbanization or industrialization. It's I'm just speculating here, it could be an impact of conflict, destruction, and all of this might impact the air quality. So if we look at SDG number 13, on the other hand, SDG number 13, you have, for the way we do it in the Arab SDG index, is we look at different indicators. Some of them are related to emissions. And we have an indicator that tells us about the impact on people, like how many people were affected by climate-related disasters. And looking at this, again, you find a lot of differences. So, but to summarize it, one of the findings that we have is that the countries that have the least or score green, to be accurate in terms of our dashboard, the countries that score green on emissions, they tend to have a red score on the number of people affected by climate disasters or climate-related disasters, and vice versa. Some countries that have red scores on emissions, they tend to have green scores on the number of people affected. So you can see that there is an element here of inequality. Sort of, if we want to summarize it in one sentence, I would say the countries that contribute the least to climate change actually are more vulnerable and exposed to climate change, and vice versa.
Thank you so much, Lama. Quite a comprehensive overview of the different developments, but also, of course, on the challenges. I mean, you mentioned a couple of times inequalities and the different trends in all across the region. So, and I mean, we also discussed it when we met last time that our research, your research is, of course, extremely relevant for policymakers. And in particular, also your report is, at least from my perspective, also kind of a fundamental research for policymakers within, but also beyond the region. And I was wondering, how is the report and the results of the report perceived by policymakers? So how do you communicate with them? I mean, there is always kind of a gap between research and decision making. It's always quite complicated to communicate with them and find the right way, because sometimes research could become quite complex and maybe complicated, whereas politics is oftentimes driven by daily trends and by ad hoc situations. So how do you do that? I mean, you and your team, and how would you, let's say, measure the communication with policymakers across the region when it comes to your research findings?
That is such an important question. And so, I mean, let's divide the answer into two sections. The first section, I'm going to talk generally about the connection between research and policy, and then we'll give you an idea about how we try to solve it, right? So if we start, again, I'm going to go back to the Arab SDG index and pull out one indicator that is that most of the Arab countries score red on, which is funding research, the amount that is spent on research and development. And I think there is a problem here in terms of starting with funding research, encouraging, you know, researchers to look into the issues and the challenges that the region is facing when it comes to sustainable development. There's also the issue of communicating. And I think this is a two-way problem, communicating the priorities for governments to researchers and communicating the results from the researchers to policymakers. And we see this all the time. So part of my research is to talk to academics and researchers, right? We collect a lot of data. We talk to them. They're amazing. And we have people who dedicated their lives to basically look into areas that are relevant to weather health, climate change, ecosystems. Again, I really love to talking to them and knowing about what is happening in terms of climate change and ecosystems. And when you talk to them, even if they receive funding, and this is a complaint or maybe a challenge that has been highlighted by multiple researchers, is that even when they receive funding for their research, the findings, and sometimes the funding comes from the government, by the way, even when that happens and they conduct research and they collect data, there is this disconnect between communicating the funding to policymakers and then, even if the communication happened, taking the findings into action, putting that data into policy, informing the policy, and then informing the action. So there is a breakage here. It doesn't happen all the time, but it is a common challenge that was highlighted by many people that we talked to. And I think, as I said, also the, you know, national priorities should be communicated in a way that basically would inform the researchers themselves to work on things that are more relevant to policymaking. So now we'll jump to the other section, is maybe give an idea about how to facilitate a solution, which is to bring people together. I think that one of the best ways to do it. One of the things that we do often actually is to host policy councils. Whatever the topic is, we hold policy councils where we bring stakeholders together, and then we present evidence, we present findings, we connect policymakers with the researchers, and then sit together and discuss things. The more you bring people together from different institutions, and also not only policymakers and the researchers, but also policymakers from different sectors. This is very important for climate change and health. Like, the health sector cannot do it alone. You need to involve also policymakers from other sectors.
Yeah, thank you, Lama. That was really insightful. I was just like thinking we will for sure have also some listeners with us who are maybe not so deep in the intersection between climate health and security. So I was wondering if you can bring up like 2-3 examples where you see in the region this is really a bigger problem. I mean, you already faced the problem of air pollution, but maybe there are 2-3 others coming into your mind where you can to see this intersection. And I was also wondering, do you feel like in the public and policy, this intersection of these themes is also discussed as something really important?
This is a question that I normally spend a lot of time talking about. So if I overdo it, please nudge me. Because there's so many things to say here, right? The intersection. So let's deal with it. First, we talk about the intersection between health and climate change, and then we will look at the impacts of this intersection on regional security. So for the region, of course, this relationship differs from one region to another, but for the region, and there's a lot of common challenges in the region, the countries that we mentioned in the beginning. I would say heat stress is one of the main issues. And it's often, if you look at, for example, the way health is presented in the formal communication of countries to a climate change action pathways, through, for example, their NDCs or from this region, I think only Kuwait has a national adaptation plan. If you look at it, health is mentioned there, but to varying degrees of detail, right? I think the most detailed one, if I'm not mistaken, is the UAE. I think Oman also has integrated health in their NDCs. But generally, heat is highlighted, heat stress and its impact on health. You have vector-borne and waterborne diseases. And I'll give you an example, especially for the GCC countries. It might sound a little bit far from reality, but actually when the floods hit last year, when the floods hit, especially Dubai had a lot of areas where water was stagnant for long periods of time. And it was reported that there was an increase in such diseases. For heat, there's something also that is often neglected, which is heat plus humidity. So when you have heat plus humidity, the impact on the human body becomes extremely dangerous because the body has a natural mechanism to cope with heat, and it cannot use it. It cannot cool itself. It becomes deadly. And we saw the impact in a very, very unfortunate incident in Saudi as well, when more than 1,000 people, I think, died during Hajj season. We have also the injuries and the deaths resulting from extreme weather events or climate-related disasters. Again, the floods that happened in the UAE and also in Oman. In Oman, there was also a tragic incident where a school bus was swept away by flash flood and the young students died. There is also another thing that I want to highlight, and especially for areas like Iraq, which is drought. Syria and Iraq have been hit by droughts multiple times. Actually, in Syria, if now there is this is becoming an issue in media, talking about the droughts and its impact on so many things, because drought is not only the absence of water, right? The impact it has on livelihood, especially in farming societies, and that would lead to impacts on health and undernutrition and food security and these kind of things. So I would say these are the major trends, basically, when it comes to how the region looks at climate or health-related climate impacts. Now, what they can do to regional security, I think we can look at it from first the area of migration and displacement. Now, again, the region we're talking about has different levels of adaptive capacities. So when something happens, for example, in the GCC, we don't see displacement in the sense that we normally think of displacement is. Like, for example, there could be some temporary displacement when floods hit till, you know, homes are fixed, or, for example, rescue periods. But when we look at countries with smaller adaptive capacities, we can see some migration movements that are climate impacted within the national borders, like farmers losing their livelihood, as we said, and they migrate, might be from countryside to urban areas, which put pressure on urban areas and leads it to its own challenges, of course. The other way, I would say, the conflict over resources. And we see this a lot in water, and especially in a region like this region where water is scarce already, this could become an issue. And these things combined might lead to also some political instability in some areas. This is a possibility. And I think there was a research done some years ago on measuring or assessing the impact that the drought had on the Syrian situation and the Syrian political instability that happened.
Great, Lama. Just for clarification, for some of the listeners who are not familiar with the acronym GCC, which you have mentioned a couple of times. So GCC stands for the Gulf Cooperation Council, which consists of Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, Oman, Bahrain, and Kuwait, so all the Gulf monarchies. So just for those of us who don't know exactly what GCC stands for. You mentioned a lot of challenges and a lot of uncertainties within the region. And of course, I mean, as an observer, as an external observer, sometimes you might wonder, okay, if so many countries are facing similar challenges when it comes to climate change, natural disasters, drought, air pollution, etc., where is the joint regional framework for cooperation? So why are those countries not cooperating more closely with each other to really address those challenges? And I mean, that might be kind of a provocative question, because this kind of cooperation does not only not exist in West Asia and the Arabian Peninsula, but also, of course, in other regions all over the world. So that's not, my question is not 100% directed only to the region. Why is the region failing in do so? But what are the main reasons maybe for this lack of coordination, or where do you see perspectives for enhanced cooperation when it comes to health issues, climate change, and security?
I think we need like multiple sessions to unpack this question.
And of course, it's very comprehensive, but maybe you can focus on the maybe one, two, three main reasons and trends.
Absolutely. I was just kidding. Of course, there is an answer that could be provided for this. And I think maybe we can answer it first by unpacking some of the challenges, the question why, right? And then we will look into some recommendations or solutions. So for collaboration or cooperation to happen, there needs to be some foundational pillars, let's say, right, that would encourage such cooperation to happen. And if we are talking about climate change and health, right, if this is, we are approaching this region, the cooperation of the countries of this region on the basis of climate change and health, then I would say the first reason is that the awareness around it. Even at a national level, we have barely started to talk about this. Like only recently, we started to talk about this. And I think there was a report published by the WHO in 2023. It's very interesting research where they looked at the quantity and the quality of health mentioned in the NDCs. And then the trend is that there isn't an improvement, right? Between, I think it was 2019 till 2023, there was an improvement, but still not the level that it should be. So I think the first is to have that awareness and to have that commitment as well to health and climate. And how do you want to deal with it? Do you want to deal with it on a national level? Do you want to deal with it on a sector level? Because till now, we also don't see a lot of cooperation happening nationally across sectors. And I cannot stress this enough. And I always say this, that the health sector cannot do it alone. Like, I'm going to give you an example, working outdoors in the heat. The health sector can tell you that this is very, very bad and can give you guidelines and can tell you you need to drink water and wear whatever. And if something happens, you can call this number. But then you need to have also other sectors contributing to decreasing that phenomenon, right? When we talk about floods, the health sector does respond to injuries happening, you know, from flash floods or whatever the impact is from heavy rains. But you also need the transport sector, you need the police, the emergencies, you need the infrastructure, you need the energy sector. All of these come together. So there's not enough cooperation between sectors. Let's say in terms of governance, and here we are expanding beyond the national level, right? If we look at how different countries within this region govern health and climate change, we don't see a framework or unified framework for that. It's more of a nationalized framework. So you need some sort of a governance, a model that allows for such integration. I haven't worked with data so many years by now. I will tell you, data is also one of the pillars that should exist for national, like within the borders, outside the borders, cooperation to happen. If I cannot understand the risks that I have, if I cannot understand the risks that are coming trans-border manner, because, you know, most of extreme weather events, they don't just happen within the national borders, right? Climate change has that transboundary element. So, and this actually should be, this should be very attractive as a basis for cooperation. The basis that climate change is not a one country problem. It is transboundary. Extreme weather events, they pass by, like storms pass by. Oman, UAE, Yemen, and it goes to Saudi sometimes. So there is this element here that should be very attractive, right? But that needs data.
Great, Lama. I was thinking right now on a positive note, and also give maybe some great examples here now the stage. So I was wondering, and also as a person, you are well networked in the region on the themes. I think your eyes are always open what is going on. So I was wondering, do you know of some initiatives in the region, maybe on a really small scale, where you feel like, okay, this really makes sense to scale up from a national level to a regional level, or also smaller on a local level? And also based on this, you already talked like how important it is to have collaboration between different sectors. Maybe there's also an initiative you feel like, okay, this really should be highlighted.
Sure. So let's first start by the sectoral approach to dealing with the climate and health. I am aware, so this is not an only example, but I am aware that the UAE, for example, did a sectoral analysis, and the health was one of the sectors. And this is a good basis. Like, this is a good base to build a sectoral cooperation on. So you analyze the risks based on a sector approach. And then the next step is to identify the stakeholders that are impacted or that should be, you know, involved in the solutions. And then you sort of build up a plan that identifies your targets. How do you want to deal with them? Who is responsible for what? And then you move on forward. So if we want to look outside the national borders, I think Saudi and the UAE committed to early warnings for all initiative. I think it was recently launched. And that involves working on early warning within the national borders and also support other countries. So it's early warnings for all. So basically, there is a gap that we need to narrow down. It should not be only focusing on the national, what is happening inside a country. So for other initiatives, I think it depends on the country. And again, we normally tend to think about, you know, sub-regions and regions in a similar manner. But I think even in the GCC countries, the approach that each country is taking is different to deal with climate change and health. For example, Saudi, I know that Saudi focuses on air quality. There have been a push to enhance air quality, and that's mentioned actually in their green initiative, which has also a part that is called Green Initiative in the Middle East. So maybe that's sort of put things into a cooperation mindset. I think there's also participating in global programs, like things coming, you know, from the WHO, or even, for example, aligning climate targets and aligning SDGs. So back to the SDGs, aligning SDGs and climate targets with the national visions. It was very, very prominent in the UAE Vision 2021. It had many elements from the SDGs. And this could be also on a local level. In Saudi, some cities in Saudi, for example, are with the global frameworks for sustainable development or climate. And I think that the reason why I'm mentioning this, because they are a framework, right? They're clear frameworks that can align or can open up doors for cooperation on the basis of that framework.
Yeah, Lama, I cannot say how happy I am that you were today with us and you gave us such a broad insight in the SDGs, but also how everything is related to health, climate and security into the region. You gave us a lot of insights and also inspiration, I hope, for the listeners to also have a broader look into the themes and also combine it. So I really appreciate your time, your insights. I'm really thankful. So again, such a pleasure. And also to co-host this together here with Sebastian. Thank you, dear Lama. So in case you have some final words for us, the stage is yours.
Well, I just want to thank you again. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. And I'm so glad that this podcast is focusing on climate and health. I cannot really say enough about this. I think it's very important and it should be a focus for policies and national efforts in fighting the impacts of climate change, because they can have catastrophic results on health outcomes. And sometimes they actually also reverse the gains that we've made in health already. So thank you very much for hosting me and bringing this topic to the front.
Thank you, Lama, also from my end. Of course, very, very insightful. I learned a lot of things, and it's also great that you not only focused on the catastrophic implications of our topics, but also on potential solutions and positive trends. I think that also sent a good message to policymakers, but also to people who are more interested into the nexus of health and climate. So thank you again. I mean, the Tafahum Water Bottle Project was focusing on this topic quite tremendously. So I really recommend checking out not only our podcast, but also the policy brief that is out now. And you can find the link in the show notes or on our website. So thank you again for all of you to staying with us. Thank you, Zina. Such a great pleasure to co-moderate the podcast with you. And all the best to everybody. Ma salama.